Acres? Does that name ring a bell?
I'm sorry, what?
Are you familiar with Mr. Stu Peters?
Not off the top of my head.
Thank you so much for being here. I appreciate it.
Thanks, Stu. Always love coming on your show.
Kash Patel, thank you so much for making the time to be here with us. We appreciate it.
Thanks, Stu. Appreciate it.
Thank you so much for being here. We appreciate it.
Thanks, Stu. Appreciate it. See you soon.
I got to go, Kash. Thank you so much for being here. We really appreciate it.
Thanks,
up against a hard break here. Thank you so much for being here. We appreciate it.
Thanks so much. Appreciate it, Stu.
Kash Patel, thank you so much for being here. We appreciate it.
Thanks so much, Stu. Appreciate it. You got a great show.
When he says, I don't know who Stu Peters is, who's a white supremacist, he went on his podcast 8 times. I think, you know, one time, maybe, you know, you blacked out that day. You go on 8 times, you probably know who that person is.
Stu Peters, does that name ring a bell?
I'm sorry, what?
Well, yeah, I think I have a pretty good theory about why that occurred on Capitol Hill. That was the Democrat from Illinois, Senator Dick Durbin, who has worked incredibly hard to keep the Epstein files from coming out. He doesn't want you to know who was visiting Jeffrey Epstein. He doesn't want you to know if he was visiting Jeffrey Epstein. And so, of course, he's working as hard as he can. Because, you see, if it comes out that all of these people are pedophiles, if it comes out that all of these people are sexually compromised and that all of these people were subject to the Epstein Mossad Israeli Jewish operation that holds blackmail material over all of our sitting U.S. Congress people and our senators and people who are installed into these positions of power, then all of them will be exposed. That government would be abolished and torn down by a pissed off populace, replaced with one that's actually representative of the people. And then Israel and the Jews lose 100% of the power in the occupation, and that dissipates. So when I say things like all of this hinges on sexual access to kids, this is what I'm talking about. Unfettered, legal, sexual access to children has led to the occupation of governments across the West, not just limited to the United States, not just limited to government. Unelected bureaucrats, people in the cabinet, the administration, the State Department, society-wide, in our Department of Education, in our schools, everywhere, it all comes crumbling down if these people are exposed as the pedophiles that they likely are. Dick Durbin does not want these Epstein files to come out. I think that Kash Patel probably has a play here. Obviously, I don't know what the legal ramifications are for the Fox News channel just coming out and calling me a white supremacist. I don't know how a sitting U.S. senator on Capitol Hill during a confirmation hearing for the upcoming installed FBI director, I don't know how he can just sit up there and call me a white supremacist and claim that I'm working with prominent neo-Nazis. So I'll be seeking legal advice on that. Are they allowed to do that? Are they really allowed to do that on the Fox News channel to tarnish the reputation of somebody like myself who's been out here on an island broadcasting the truth, risking it all, committing economic and financial and business suicide because I am convicted in my beliefs, in my faith? This platform is morally upright, filled with integrity, and no matter how uncomfortable these truths are, we are going to disseminate them to the public, which is why we are relevant. We aren't relevant because the Fox News Channel talks about us. We aren't relevant because Dick Durbin mentions us during a confirmation hearing for the FBI director on Capitol Hill under a new Trump administration that was installed after Miriam Adelson paid $100 million to have that installation occur. That's not what makes us relevant. This doesn't have anything to do with my ego. The last thing I wanted to do was receive 1,436 text messages yesterday about how I was being called a white supremacist on national television. We have solutions to discuss here. We have an occupation. We have a parasitic cockroachian infestation. For over 2,000 years, Christendom and Western civilization have been plagued by this strange and subversive and narcissistic group of demons who believe that they were chosen by God to rule over you, to rule over your children, to rule over mankind, to force other people to do their bidding, to force others to generate revenue, to pay down interest, and to shed blood, to go and die for them. This is a group of people who function more as a criminal enterprise than they do as a race or as a religion or as a nationality, and they're not ashamed of it. No, instead, they're proud of this. Because, again, they believe that God chose them to rule the world, to subjugate humanity by any means necessary, up to and including mass rape and mass murder, up to and including pedophilia and child sex trafficking and organ harvesting. And they have been doing this on TV in front of the entire world for the past year. And if for any reason you haven't just quite figured it out yet, you just don't know what the hell I'm talking about, who is Stu referring to? I'm talking about the Jews. Let's just get down to brass tacks. Okay, because I'm not going to coddle you. I don't have time to protect your feelings. If you've got feelings that you need to deal with, then go and deal with your feelings. But here we have a problem, and here we have to present solutions to that problem. You know, 100 years ago, Henry Ford wrote that, quote, "The genius of the Jew is to live off the people, not off the land, nor off the production of commodities from raw material, but off people. Let other people till the soil. The Jew, if he can, will live off the tiller." And that about sums up the state of the world and the state of this country today. Because if you look at all of the ills in our society, when you look at the things that are hurting and killing Americans, whether it's open borders or big pharma, a poisoned food supply, the cost of living, wars in every corner of the world, the dismemberment and murder of preborn babies in the womb, the list goes on. No matter what the issue is, when you start digging into it, when you start connecting the dots and seeing who's in charge of all of it, it always goes back to a Jew. It goes back to George Soros. It goes back to AIPAC. It goes back to the Hebrew Immigrant Aid Society. It goes back to the war profiteers. It goes back to BlackRock. It goes back to State Street. It goes back to Vanguard. To all of the financial movers and shakers who are directly tied to this country's Federal Reserve and the globalized Rothschild-run cabal, whose members believe that they were chosen by God to run the entire world at the expense of everybody else. It all goes back to the Jews every single time. And they're making money on it. More than anything else, these people will profit from the misfortune and the misery and the suffering of you and your children. It's their specialty. It's what they do. And they do it well, obviously. The Jews ran the transatlantic slave trade. They overthrew Russia, killed a royal family in satanic, Talmudic, Jewish ritualistic form. They starved millions of Christians to death. They started two world wars that killed 100 million people. And right now, the Jews are running a genocide of men, women, and children so they can steal their land and establish a Talmudic empire from hell in the Middle East called Greater Israel. So that they can steal land from other people and then use it to their own ends, to establish the Jewish caliphate that they have been fantasizing about since the beginning of time. Stu Peters is anti-Semitic. Stu Peters is a racist. Stu Peters is filled with hate. Really? Why isn't Dick Durbin or the Fox News Channel talking about how these Jews are already buying up and selling Palestinian properties at synagogues in New York City? Why isn't Dick Durbin talking about how Israel is literally redrawing the map? Well, I'll tell you why. Because he's being paid handsomely to protect them. He is being paid handsomely to protect that Epstein file and those lists of names. This murderous land grab is expanding its borders to cover Syrian land. So here we go again. Just like Henry Ford said, the Jews profit from other people and their misfortunes, their death, and their demise. And none of this should be controversial to talk about, because if the Chinese or the Iranians or the North Koreans or, God forbid, a white man were behind any one of these things, it could be and it would be talked about constantly. They would be accused of everything that they were guilty of and so much more. But when the Jews are running the whole show, there's no criticism allowed. There are no questions asked. And those of us who do ask questions, we face censorship. We face lawfare. We face economic warfare, character assassination. Sometimes physical assault, sometimes physical assassination. But you know what? There are more of us than there are of them. And there are those of us that, no matter what the cost, will not stop revealing the truth. And that's me. And that's this network. Because we can't stop. Once you see it, you can't unsee it. Once you learn it, you can't unlearn it. This mission is too important. And this is also true for others. It's true for people like Dr. David Duke. Dr. Duke can only be described as a living legend for advocacy, for Christians, for whites, really for Gentiles of all stripes all around the world. Dr. Duke has been asking and answering the Jewish question for decades. And for that, he has been maligned, he has been censored, he has been targeted with violence, he has been targeted with lawfare. Dr. Duke has been steadfast in his mission to fight the synagogue of Satan with the one thing that it fears the most, the truth. And the truth is, the world has a Jewish problem. The truth is, America has a Jewish problem, and we need to work toward a Jewish solution. And so I'm not going to keep him or any of you waiting any longer. As you just heard, Dr. Duke is in the waiting room, and here he is now. You just couldn't wait. I know, jail, you've been to jail, and that's fine because you're here to be spotlighted.
Thank you so much, and thank you for this opportunity to actually defend myself, because it's very interesting. I was on Meet the Press 3 times years ago. I got 65% of the European American vote for the governor of Louisiana, for U.S. Senate. I unseated a Republican sitting governor. I was outspent 100-1, and I got elected to the House of Representatives, where I served 4 years. I was elected as the chairman of the largest Republican district in Louisiana. And I'm an individual, basically, who is, first of all, in fact, maybe the best way we can begin this is we have to define some terms. I listened to the clip in the beginning of the show where You were called basically a white supremacist. You were also called an anti-Semite and so forth. Let's just examine those terms for a second. I do not accept the term of racist. I'm anything but a racist, because a racist is a term invented by Leon Trotsky. Real name, well, his real name is a Jewish name. And one day you'll hear it, you know that name. I'll despair it for right now. And Leon Trotsky was one of the heads of the Communist Party along with Lenin. And Lenin himself was a Jewish descendant as well. Leon Trotsky invented the term racism to define any European that wanted to defend his heritage, his values, his traditions, his people, and his interests. The Declaration of Independence says that every people should have the right to control their own interests. I believe that's true for Americans, for white people, for people from Britain or France or Germany or Greece or Rome or the Middle East. Palestinians, certainly, all the left believes that, obviously. The Palestinians should control their life, the true left anyway, not the Jewish control left. The Indian people from India are the Amerindians in terms of South America and Central America and America. We all respect all races. And the truth is, I'm the last thing in the world from a racist or a supremacist, because a racist is defined by this media. And being an academic and being a PhD, I study a lot of the etymology of words. And words are very important. If they define a word in a certain way and people understand a word to mean certain things, unless you straighten them out in terms of how you stand in terms of that definition, you're just accepting being termed what they say racist is or they say supremacist is. So they say a racist is a person who hates other people, wants to oppress them, harm them, maybe enslave them, even commit genocide against them. Yeah, that if that's the term for racist, okay, I'll make it clear. I'm not a racist. I'm the opposite of a racist, because I don't want to destroy any people. I don't want to suppress any people. I don't want to enslave any people. I do want to make sure that my people are not enslaved as well, that they're not oppressed, that they're not harmed, their families aren't wrecked by this immorality and destructiveness of the Hollywood Jewish media. That's, you know, so a racist is not what I am. You know, I am. I'm a human rights activist. And I think it's fundamental human rights for all people to want to preserve their own heritage. And I've been one of the best known defenders of Europeans and people against immigration. Way back in the 70s, I'll be 75 years old this year. Way back in the early 70s, I organized the first watch of the American border, where we reported the illegal immigrants to the Border Patrol. And I saw then that there was a Jewish plan to ethnically replace the European people of this country, at the same time demonize the white people and try to weaponize the minorities to vote in blocks for their positions. And I realized that there was an effort to destroy our people, because I began to realize, and this is the key, I think, that there's nothing more racist and supremacist in the world than Jewish supremacy and Jewish racism, where they literally not only say that other people are inferior, which they do, including us, but they use a religious, a perversion of the religion of the Old Testament and the Talmud. They use that to say that people who are Gentiles don't really have a right to any sort of sovereignty, that Gentiles have evil and satanic souls. The head rabbi of Israel, this is the Judaic faith, the guy that sets their immigration policy, that sets their marriage policy, he said the only purpose of all Gentiles on earth, and that means 99.8% of the population of planet Earth, that means all the European people, Asian people, Indian people, say for the Americas, other peoples around the world. That means if you're not a Jew, if you're a Gentile, if you're a Greek, or if you're a Spanish or you're a German or a Scandinavian or a Frenchman or an Anglo-Saxon, you absolutely have no purpose on earth other than to serve Jews. That's also the same thing that the great Rebbe, who Trump's daughter and son-in-law go to the tomb to worship. He said the only purpose of Gentiles on earth is to serve Jews. Quote, Gentiles were created to work, to bind, to sieve, to dig, and Jews are designed to sit and eat like an effendi. An effendi is the old Turkish term for a lord and master. But this is what he said. And of course, some people would say, okay, he's trying to exploit Gentiles. But he says, no, we're not trying to keep Gentiles from having a long life any more than a Jew would want to see a Jew's donkey not have a long life. Because if the donkey dies, he can't serve his Jewish master. I mean, these are words of what's equivalent perhaps to the Pope, you know, in the Catholic Church, or in terms of Christianity. But these are words from a Jew, and that's a top religious leader. So it's shocking to hear, and it sounds crazy, but it's true. Another good example of this incredible immorality that's represented by both Judaism and Zionism. And by the way, Judaism, people often say, Judaism's not the problem. It's Zionism that's a problem. Well, the truth is that Judaism is the problem, because it's not necessarily what the Old Testament was. It's not necessarily those parts of it, even though Jews have perverted that a lot in the last few centuries. But it's really Zionism, and well, Judaism today was being perverted even to the time of Christ. And those Christians, and we have a lot of brother Christians watching this program, I know, and listening to you, and you're a pro-Christian person. We all love the Christian heritage of our countries. You got to understand, if you read the New Testament, you'll find Jesus's ministry was exposing Jewish racism and hatred against non-Jews. Jesus went to the Samaritan at Jacob's well and said, I don't want to hurt and persecute Samaritans, the non-Jews. I want to give them everlasting life. Everyone has equality. He said the biggest commandment is to love your God with all your heart. And the commandment that goes with that is to treat everybody else with the golden rule, to treat people fairly and decently. And I want to treat everybody decently and everybody fairly. And I want to make sure that our people as well have the right to be treated fairly. And we're not. As you said earlier, we're being led into these wars. So here's the head rabbi saying this. The head of the Israeli military rabbi is a guy named Karim. That's the top officer in the military to represent the Judaic faith to the Jewish troops of Israel. And you know what he said on his own blog and website? These words are fact. I can quote this from Ynet News, which is the biggest publication in Israel. And on that website, he says, I can quote this just about word for word. You can get the exact quote on Ynet News. It's even more powerful to read it on Ynet News. You can even pull it up. You know, Israeli rabbi, head of the IDF, says that it's perfectly fine for an Israeli, listen to this, an Israeli soldier, what I call terrorist, to rape and force a Gentile woman to have sex, to rape them. It's perfectly fine to do that. And this guy is so sick. He says, to show you that the level of this is supposed to be the Jewish faith, supposed to be a godlike faith, right? But he says, it's okay for the soldier to have his, you know, to fulfill his evil inclinations of raping a Gentile, because he's serving a purpose. And his purpose by doing that is to increase his morale so his fellow terrorist Jews, basically, he didn't call them terrorists, but that's where they are, so they could go kill more Palestinians or whoever else that they're fighting. You can't make this up. That's the head rabbi He literally says to even follow their evil inclinations to go and rape, you know, Gentile women. Now, I want to make something clear to everybody listening that when they talk about Gentiles, it's not just Palestinians that are Gentile. And there's a quote in there by him. I'd like you to read that quote that gives you a direct quote of what he said. Could you do that, Stu? It's a powerful quote, and I'm glad you pulled that up. There's a picture of the guy.
Yeah, can you guys scroll to the quote? Where is the quote?
You're almost there, I think.
What is the problem with conscripting girls to the army?
That's after that one.
Okay, because damage to modesty. More shocking answer on the same site.
Now listen to this. This is the one you want to quote with emphasis.
Okay, all right.
Slowly and powerfully. Listen.
When asked if soldiers were permitted to rape women during war, Kareem replied that as part of maintaining fitness for the army and the soldiers' morale during fighting, it is permitted to breach the walls of modesty and satisfy the evil inclination by lying with attractive Gentile women against their will out of consideration for the difficulties faced by the soldiers and for overall success. End quote.
This is the top Jewish Orthodox leader of the Israeli military that sets the policy and the morality for the Israeli military. And he said,
put that back on the screen so that people, if viewers, if you want to screenshot this,
please put that back
on the screen. Yeah, there it is. So there it is right in the middle. The rabbi gave a more shocking answer.
Yeah.
On the same site when asked if maintaining
fitness for the army. Read it again. It's worth, if you learn this and you understand this, you realize that everything you've been told about, everything Jewish and Judaism and Zionism and the Israeli state is a lie. Listen to this. Read this again.
As part of maintaining fitness for the army and the soldiers' morale during fighting, it is permitted to breach the walls of modesty and satisfy the evil inclination by lying with attractive Gentile women against their will out of consideration for the difficulties faced by the soldiers and for overall success, end quote. Against their will, he's saying,
it's fine to rape Gentile women. And this is the top religious officer of the Judaic faith in the Israeli military. I mean, you just can't make this stuff up. I mean, could you imagine a Navy chaplain or a Army chaplain or whatever say this to the troops? It's fine for you to follow your evil inclinations and rape those enemies. They teach soldiers exactly the opposite in terms of human rights. Now, this is not some sort of obscure racism off in some remote place. You know, this is the real policy, the official policy of Judaism. And it's so important. Now, we talked about racism, okay, first off. So I'll make it clear. The way racism is defined.
I just want to, because what you just said is very important for people to understand so that when they get pushback, when they're out here talking about this.
That's
you said
from
that
this YNET is not News, just, by the way, the biggest publication in Israel.
This is
in
not
Israel.
Some, yep, the YNET News, the biggest publication in Israel. And like you just said, Dr. Duke, this is not just some obscure, extreme, you know, detached, radical rabbi or, you know, some unhinged, weird exception to the rule or anomaly when it comes to Judaism and Jews. This is the IDF's chief rabbi.
Yes.
This is Colonel Eyal Kareem, the IDF's intended next chief rabbi.
Right.
This is who this person is.
Right.
So this isn't just some offshoot. This isn't just some rando out here shooting his mouth off. This is the IDF's chief rabbi.
Now, listen, I'm not saying that every Jew thinks it's fine to rape a Gentile woman, because I don't believe every Jew is that way.
But if every Jew were to listen to the instructions of their faith leader, they would believe that was
exactly
correct.
This is the Jewish elite. And there are some Jews who are doing some good defending Palestinians and against the murderous genocide that's going on there. And by the way, it's not just the Palestinians facing genocide. It's Europeans facing genocide in Ukraine. Ukraine has a Jewish master, and they've got Gentile Christian slaves right now. They've convinced them that the Russians are their enemy. they got them into a war, but they didn't do it. It was the American Jews, the people who control our foreign policy and control our political process and our campaign fundraising. And they have got these Ukrainians dying by the hundreds of thousands. Colonel Douglas McGregor says that at least 600,000 Ukrainian young men, and these are almost all young Christians, some of them are very nationalist, some of them are very patriotic Europeans, have already died in a war that was never a war that they were going to win. I've told people from the beginning, this was not a war that was winnable by Ukraine against a much more powerful force. They'd just been sent to a meat grinder. But the interesting thing is that Jews themselves have always hated Ukrainians, because Ukrainians' national image and national language, I studied in Ukraine, by the way. I got my doctorate in Kiev, Ukraine. That's right. And I studied much about the Holodomor. And that was the great massacre. And it was a massacre by famine of millions of Ukrainians, where the Soviet Bolsheviks under Stalin, but under the head of this program against the Ukrainians, was a guy named Lazar Kaganovich. And what they did was, and this, by the way, when I say they killed 7 million Ukrainians, and most of them were children who starved to death because of the fact the Soviets came and stole all the food of the most productive farmers and ranchers and animal husbandry people in the world. And then they stole their food and they got millions and millions, billions, in fact, of equivalent dollars of today's money on the thing, but they caused the death of 7 to 10 million. And when I say 7 to 10 million victims, I'm not making this out of whole cloth. There was a United Nations commission, including America was represented there, many European countries and other countries, of historians who studied the Holodomor that went on in Ukraine. And this was in 2003. They had a commission, its official report, and they had different varying opinions on the number of victims of the Ukrainian so-called Holodomor. You've heard about the Holocaust. This is more victims than the Holocaust, 7 to 10 million. And this Holocaust, this mass murder, was almost all children, because when you starve people, the first ones to go are the children who have a much higher metabolism, who have weaker immune systems, and their mothers, which are often breastfeeding even the children, trying to see their children survive. And they had huge families in Ukraine, often 5, 6, 7 children. So the vast majority, I say 60 to 70%, of the people that died in this purposeful famine of the Soviet Jews. Now, this was run by Lazar Kaganovich. Lazar Kaganovich was a Jewish communist who is actually the head of they call it the directorate then, or they call it the secretary. And he became, you know, he helped usher in communism. He was from Ukraine, but he wasn't Ukrainian. He orchestrated the murder of Ukrainians. He wouldn't have done this to the Jewish people of the country, for sure. And he did this. And he later, and he actually, after he was the head of the Communist Party in Ukraine, after the Bolsheviks took over, he then became the second in command to Stalin. He orchestrated the Ukrainian Holocaust called the Holodomor. So more Jews died in the Holodomor by the estimates. Now, this was the consensus of 25 different nations' leading historians. Now, Jews are always going to try, they try to reduce this to 3 or 4 million, whatever. But the truth is, the evidence is there. In fact, the term genocide actually was invented by a Jew named Raphael Lemkin. And Lemkin, he invented the term genocide. And I appreciate that term, because I think genocide is the worst crime. To destroy a whole people, wipe out a whole race, a tradition, that's a horrible crime. And to or target people by their race. But Lemkin said, he pointed out that this, what happened in Ukraine, reduced the Ukrainian population from about 90% Ukrainian to about 60 to 70%. You know what's interesting, Stu? And I think your listeners will find this shocking and tragic, but amazing. just as they reduced the Ukrainians, you know, from 80 to 90% Ukraine to 60% or 70% at the most, they've done the same thing to America. When I first went to university, I went to LSU, got my undergraduate degree at LSU, later I got elected to the office. And after I finished my time in office, I went back to school. I went to school in Ukraine, worked for my doctorate. And the funny thing is, and this is what's so amazing, I studied a lot about the Holodomor then, and I began to realize that the real Holocaust deniers, the biggest Holocaust in the history of the world, have actually been done by communists, and communist Jews were the leaders of communism. Well,
as Christians in a Christian country, we have a right to be at minimum agnostic about the leadership being all Jewishly occupied.
We literally should be at war with fucking Israel 100 times over, and instead we're just sending them money, and it's fucking craziness.
Look at the state of Israel, look at the state of Tel Aviv, and look at the state of Philadelphia. You tell me where this money's going. You tell me who's benefiting from this.
I am prepared to die in the battle fighting this monstrosity that would wish to enslave me and my family and steal away any rights to my property and to take away my God. Go fuck yourself. Will I submit to that?
And if you've got a foreign state, you've got dual citizens in your government, who do you think they're supporting?
God, right now, would you protect the nation of Israel and protect those of us, not just our church, but every church in the world and in this nation that's willing to put their neck on the line and say, we stand with them.
You can look at Trump's cabinet, you can look at Biden's cabinet, it's full of Jews.
Black friend in school. I have nothing against blacks. She has nothing against me. She understands where I'm coming from.
Excuse me, I'm a Jew, and I just like to say that, you know, in our Bible it says that you're like animals.
The Jews crucified our God.
So over the centuries, over the millennia, really, as the Jewish problem has developed and as the subversive, parasitic group of strange people have stretched its tentacles all over the world, a lot of things have changed. Schemes have changed, methods of subversion and control have changed, but one thing has remained an absolute constant. And the whole time, it's been at the very center of Jewish plans to take over other nations, to subjugate their people, to bend their leaders to the Jewish will. And that thing is usury. The act of loaning money with interest. You see, Christians are banned. Did you know that? Christians are banned from practicing usury. Muslims are banned from practicing usury. We've done all kinds of research on usury, and we're going to get into it. And Jews are banned from practicing usury against one another, but not against Gentiles. Not against the goyim that they see as cattle to be used and abused and slaughtered. And for thousands of years, these Jewish usury practices and all of the shekels that those practices bring in, they have been a centerpiece of their existence. This quite literally goes back to the time of Christ, to when Jesus fashioned a whip from his belt, flipped over tables on the money changers, and chased them out of the temple. He flipped them over the tables on a biblical era version of Goldman Sachs Jews, of BlackRock Jews, and he drove them from the temple. We need this to happen again in modern times. These people, these con artists, need to be driven from our society, from the society that they have subverted by using our own money and our own economies as a weapon that has now been fashioned against us. a weapon that they were able to seize control of through their creation of the international banking system, a system that was built by Jews for the purpose of enriching and empowering Jews. And they did that by turning usury loose on the people of the world. That's what the Rothschild cabal is when you take it down to brass tacks. It's a bunch of Jews led by the Rothschild family and a bunch of their Shabbos goy paid off minions who are practicing usury against the people of the world, especially against the people of the Christian world, like Americans. And every single dollar that our government spends is a dollar that has been loaned with interest by the Federal Reserve. I'm going to repeat that. Every single dollar that our government spends, which, by the way, our government is not a for-profit business, meaning that's your money. So every one of your dollars that our government spends is a dollar that has been loaned with interest by the Federal Reserve, by other banks and other governments chartered by Jewish banksters. And from there, it just trickles down through all of American society. Everything has been consumed by usury. A sin, which according to the Bible is on par with sodomy in its severity. And that makes sense because usury is pretty much a form of sodomy. You get sodomized by your lender. You get bent over the barrel. You agree to do whatever interest rate they give you, and then you work your fingers to the bone to pay it all off. If you don't, you'll lose everything. And this is true in all stages of life. If you want to go to college, you have to take part in usury. If you want to buy a house, you have to take part in usury. If you want to buy a car, it's the same thing. It goes on and on and on, unless you're independently wealthy. If you're a 21st century American or just someone who lives in the modern world, then guess what? Chances are you have absolutely no choice but to bend over the barrel and give some Jew your money just so you can function. And all of that has been made possible by usury. It's a circular system of Jews sucking up money through a straw. So how can we push back on this? How can we break free of this system? Well, to learn more about that, we'll get back to our discussion with David Duke, who said that he wants to add to that. Dr. Duke.
I'd love to.
Yeah. Usury, what say you?
And by the way, you're extremely knowledgeable. And you're rather new to the issue, but you have an amazing amount of knowledge and ability and information. And everything you said is correct. There's one thing I might add to you when you talked about Goldman Sachs. First of all, understand Goldman Sachs is a criminal, massively criminal bank. Last year, they were found guilty of an international criminal fraud conspiracy, where they destroyed the entire economy, the educational system, and the medical system of a whole country, Malaysia. It was a $4.5 billion scheme, and they pled guilty to it. $4.5 billion criminal conspiracy. Now, it's not just Malaysia that Goldman Sachs has been criminal about. It's about America. The $2.7 billion nothing actually was up to $4.5 billion, and they paid a large fine on that. Goldman Sachs also, if you go to a publication called Better Markets, it's a leading financial publication in New York, and it keeps track of some financial institutions and the biggest banks. And it talks about the fact that Goldman Sachs, just look up Goldman Sachs on Better Markets. If you remember that, folks, you're going to get an education. And in that article, it points out that Goldman Sachs has been guilty for literally 30 or 40 different multi-billion dollar frauds. In fact, they've paid about $70 or $80 billion in fines and fees for their frauds. And yet they're still in business. And none of the leaders of Goldman Sachs have gone to jail. And by the way, Goldman Sachs was the biggest single campaign contributor in the United States of America. And it's run by Solomon today. It was run by other Jews before. And it's a Jewish corporation, been there for 150 years. And this organization was behind the meltdown in 2008. It was behind the COVID meltdown, and it's definitely usurious. But let's talk about usury for a second. And this is a point where we have to also show our humanity a bit here. And I think we should make points. I mean, when I talk about things of the Old Testament or whatever, New Testament, that people might think that I'm going against the New Testament or going against the Word of God, I guarantee you I'm not. I want people to understand, and Christians need to read that New Testament again and again and again, because the New Testament is actually a new covenant. It's a new covenant. Jesus Christ brought with him from God a new covenant for the Jewish people and for all people. And this covenant was that the golden, there's two things. He said, what was my greatest commandment? He said, one, it was to love your God with all your heart, all your soul, and your mind. The second, and he said he puts the two together, is you treat everyone with the golden rule. You do unto others as you'd have them do unto you. You treat everyone as you would treat your brother, as you would treat a neighbor, somebody you're close to. The old law was a Jewish supremacist law. It's like it was okay for a Jew to enslave a non-Jew, which, by the way, includes us. And Jews had not only traded a lot of black slaves, they ran the Trankler slave trade, as you said earlier. I've documented that in my books. And, you know, I can't wait for you to get a copy of my book. And we're going to be, you know, offering it. We have offers to a lot of people. A lot of millions have read my stuff. But it's just amazing that the slavery, the Encyclopedia Britannica under...
I'm going to buy 10 of your books, and I'm going to give them away to supporters of our network randomly.
I'll just draw their names. I'll send you those for your supporters. I'd be glad. Support him, and I'll be glad to send you a copy of my book. No problem. But anyway, so it's just I'm going to talk about usury, but I also want to talk for a moment to give you an understanding. What I'm doing here is I'm not criticizing Jesus Christ. I'm not criticizing the New Testament. I'm not even criticizing a lot of things. I grew up reading the Old Testament. I've read the Old Testament twice from cover to cover. I've read the New Testament twice. I've done lots of research in it. And I can tell you that Jesus Christ came, he grew up, obviously, among Jews. He studied Judaism. It seems clear from the Gospels that he read the Pentateuch, he read the so-called Torah, and he also studied and he realized what the scribes and Pharisees were doing. And he rebelled against their violation and corruption in Judaism. He absolutely went against them. Before the Second World War, before the Jewish takeover of the media and the Jewish control of what we call the cable networks. So a lot of these preachers, they made sure the only preachers that got on the cable stations were preaching this thing that of Jewish supremacism, they were preaching this idea that we have to support Israel. The truth is, in the New Testament, when it talks about Israel, it's not talking about a physical Jewish state of Israel. It's talking about a spiritual Israel. So you'll see preachers saying God has a special covenant with the Jews, that God has a covenant everlasting with the Jews. But the Deuteronomy covenant that was in the Old Testament was a conditional covenant, a covenant that said, as long as you follow the rules of God, then I will support you. I will defend you. But if you break my will, and you go against me, I'll go against you. And Jews went against, as this is what every Christian believes, they went against the Son of God. They went against, Jesus is God himself, actually. Jesus said, if you want to see the face of God, look at me, all right? Look at my face. And what did Jesus Christ say? It's in the New Testament. I can give you the exact quotes. He says, quote, just as I led them by the hand out of the land of Egypt, the Jews continued not in my covenant. And I recognize they didn't. Saith the Lord, this is in the New Testament. I mean, here's a good example. All right, let me just give you another example. So St. Paul is talking, and he says, he's talking about, you know, who are the chosen of God now. He says, "For I could wish myself were accursed and cut off from Christ because of my kinsmen by race. But it is not though the word of God has failed." He goes on to say, he says, it's not the children of the flesh who are the children of God, but the children of the promise, meaning the faith of Jesus Christ, who are the children of God. Those, in fact, he says this clearly. As it says in Hosea, "Those who are not my people, I will call my people." And in the very place where it said that, you know, you are not my people, meaning the Gentiles, you'll be called the sons of the living God. Isn't that amazing? I mean, this is what the words of Jesus Christ and the words of the New Testament says that. I mean, you can't, there's no way that, this is not unmistakable. I quoted to you earlier from Hebrews 8, 6, 8, 7, for those that need the thing, "Not according to the covenant I made with their fathers in the day when I took them by the hand out of the land of Egypt, because they continued not in my covenant." Are you going to follow the words of Jesus Christ, you Christians listening out there? Or are you going to follow the words of some preacher who is controlled by these Jewish premises, Satanists, who support the Jewish Hollywood, Jewish establishment? That's a big question, isn't it? Jesus Christ says that Jews have not taken in my covenant, right? He also says this. This is from Matthew. Listen to this. "Therefore, I tell you," he's talking to the scribes and the Pharisees and the Jews, "the kingdom of God will be taken away from you and given to a nation and nations producing the fruits of it." He talks about the parable of the vineyard, where he says, and he makes, and that, by the way, the New Testament makes clear what he's talking about here. They actually explain the parable. And it says how that there was a landowner, and he rented out his land to tenants. And this was a metaphor for the organization called, I guess, Judaism, or the faith that's supposed to be practiced by the Jews. He rented out the land, his land. They grew wine on it, right? And they didn't pay the rent. They were given this, and you know, they were supposed to be renting it. They didn't do what was necessary to them. So the owner sent us servants to go get the rent. And the servants went to get the rent, and they killed the servants. And then he said, "Oh, well, they certainly won't bother my son. I'll send my son to get the rent on this land that I let them be the tenants of, the whole this body," right? And guess what? They killed his son. And they literally say, he literally says, and they explain this, that this is the idea that Christ is giving, that the so-called vineyard, that the vineyard that was given by God to allow the Jews to hold, that they violated his work and killed not only his servants, but his very son itself. It's so clear. This is what's really in the New Testament, but it's not talked about. And it's not talked about because guess who controls things? The same people who've opened their borders, the same people who've dominated the pornography of the world, the same people who are the biggest founders of slavery in the world, the same people who led us to war after war after war, and millions of people dead across this planet. Like you said earlier, the two great world wars. I can show historically why the First World War was a Jewish war. And the reason why they, by the way, just for a quick rundown here, the reason why they wanted the First World War is because the biggest project of the Jews in the early part of the 20th century wasn't the establishment of Israel. The biggest project of Jews was to take over the world with communism. The thing is that we got to start to think about here is that the reason why they hated Jesus Christ is because he realized that Jesus realized that Judaism was going down this very dark cavern of Jewish supremacy, that somehow the Jews, 1/5 of 1% of the population of the world, had the right to rule the world, enslave everybody else. He saw this racism, he saw this hatred, and he tried to save the Jewish people from themselves. And he realized that would lead to bad things for them too, which it did, and he tried to save the rest of the world. His main message was really clear, that he offered people everlasting life. Judaism doesn't offer people everlasting life. Christianity does, the words of Jesus Christ too. And Jesus tried to save them. Jesus tried to lead them to a thing. Remember, he said, the greatest commandment is treat thy neighbor as thyself. And the neighbor was not defined as it was in the Old Testament or the Talmud. The neighbor wasn't defined as a fellow Jew. A neighbor was defined as a person, all people. And that's exactly what the New Testament teaches. That's the love it teaches. So here we are. We're considered haters, you and me both, Stu, because we dare to say things about Jews. So now we're going to answer the question of what's anti-Semitism. Okay, what is anti-Semitism? Well, I'm telling you, Christians listening, or even non-Christians, because I tell you this, whether or not you believe in Christ or you believe in the resurrection, all those things, I think everybody will agree that the overall context of the message that Jesus Christ taught is a wonderful, magnificent, beautiful message of love. Love is mentioned all the way through the New Testament, much more, in fact, than the Old Testament. He's a man of God who said, we have to love. We have to treat people right. Blessed are the peacemakers, not the war makers like we've had over the last 150 years. He believed in justice for everybody. He believed that everybody in this world, every human being that acted properly and that accepted God and also that treated their fellows, other human beings, fairly. Now, that doesn't mean that Romans can't continue to be Rome. Like Jesus said, give to Rome what Rome deserves. That doesn't mean Greeks can't be Greeks. It doesn't mean Turkey, which is 90% Turkish, cannot preserve their Turkish heritage. It doesn't mean the Palestinians can't produce their heritage. Every people. So I believe in a principle of human rights. That's why I call myself a human rights activist, because I think the most natural human right of all is for all people to be able to rule themselves, preserve their very heritage. Our very Declaration of Independence is based on the idea that everyone can determine their own government, and that government's in the interest of the people of that land, not some sort of alien force. I'm going to give you just two short quotes of Jesus Christ that should tell you everything you need to know, all right? And if you hear these quotes, you will realize that the United States Congress just tried to make it illegal for you to criticize Israel, criticize Jews, or say anything. By their own law, they would criticize the words of Christ, and people are being prosecuted right now in Canada and other places for simply quoting Jesus Christ in the New Testament, which Jews consider anti-Semitic. So here's the quotes. And then I can give you some more background later when we come after the break. But anyway, this is amazing. Listen, this is from 1 Thessalonians 2:14, okay? For you suffered the things of your own countrymen as they did from the Jews who killed both the Lord Jesus and the prophets and drove us out. Boy, they're driving us out of Europe. They're driving us out of America. They're driving the Palestinians out of Palestine. And there were many Christians there too. Anyway, and listen to this, and despise all mankind and who displease God and oppose all men, or the enemies of all men. That's the old misogynist term that we used to use for humanity, right? Men, right? But God's wrath is come upon them at last. Now, if I said that about Jews in Canada, and there's some people right now facing jail time for just quoting the New Testament. He says, this is an amazing quote, the most powerful quote. Goethe thought it was the most powerful quote in the whole New Testament. Jesus Christ goes, he's debating with the Pharisees who are calling him an idolater and all these other things. And Jesus says to them, he says, ye, and this is the, this, these are the people that were controlling the church, the same Sanhedrin that crucified him and crucified and killed many, many Christians after they tried to extinguish Jesus Christ. He said this, ye and ye fathers are the sons of the devil, and the lusts ye of your father ye will do. This is John 8:44. He was a murderer from the beginning and abode not in truth, because there's no truth in him. When he speaketh a lie, he speaketh of his very essence, because he's the father of lies. And by the way, in that same in that same great book of John, John 8, that was 44, that quotation, he has an earlier quote that's the most common quote for the defense of freedom of speech. And it goes like this. Jesus said, ye shall know the truth, and the truth shall set you free. And so he said about the Jews, quote, that you are the fathers of the lie. And he said, when you speak a lie, you speak of your essence. I don't know how I can explain anything, because everything that we see, and we've been talking about here, even starting today, just like, why have you not heard about the millions of Christians murdered by these Jewish communists in a communist movement that was created by a Jew? By the way, he was also a Satan worshiper, Karl Marx. And that's no joke. This is not some sort of QAnon conspiracy thing. There's a major book on Karl Marx talking about this. And by the way, the same newspaper, the New York Times, which is the most powerful newspaper in America, had an article 2 years ago, and the headline read, Happy Birthday, Karl Marx, you were right. The United States Congress in Bill Clinton's time had a resolution of joint sides of Congress, and it absolutely honored the 100 million victims of communism.
So, Dr. David Duke, thank you so much for being here. It was an absolute honor.